Mr. Rifkin, you have recently published a book that is titled The European Dream: How Europe's Vision of the Future is Quietly Eclipsing the American Dream. Before we talk about a possible German dream, let us briefly talk about your view of the European dream. How would you describe this emerging European dream?
I'd start by saying that, in an interesting way, it's the mirror opposite of the American dream, which makes it so intriguing. The American dream, stripped to its essentials, says that regardless of the station to which you're born, if you get a good public education and you work hard, you can become an individual success in America. Meanwhile, there's an emerging European dream on the other side of the Atlantic. It's really developed since World War II, and it comes out of the ashes of defeat in 1945. And after 1,000 years of bloodshed on the European continent and 2 world wars and the Holocaust, they looked at the rubble and they said, we simply cannot do this anymore. It doesn't work the way we organize our political, social, and cultural life on this planet. We have to put down the sword, and we have to develop new ways to cooperate and share and develop reciprocity and trust with each other. Up to this point in time, every governing agency in history has been born out of victory, snatching resources, exploiting people, seizing territory, revolution. The European Union is the first political experiment in history based on defeat and the defeated coming together to cooperate. And with it comes a dream. If you ask a European what's the American dream, they can easily tell you. If you ask a European what's the European dream, at first they're puzzled because they've never thought of having a dream. Only Americans can dream. But when I lay out the particulars of what Europeans would like their life to be like and what they would envision for the future of their children, it's clear that there is a common set of beliefs that stretch across every country of Europe from the Irish Sea to the doorsteps of Russia. And here's how I'd lay out the European dream. One, a belief in inclusivity, that no one should fall too far behind between the rich and the poor, and that the community has a responsibility to show solidarity to the less fortunate. Two, a belief in multicultural diversity, at least in theory, and that every culture has something to contribute. Unity and diversity is the moniker of the European Union. Three, a belief in balancing work and play, understanding that human beings do not live to work, they work to live. Four, a sense of promoting social rights and universal human rights, the right to universal health care, the right to retirement benefits, the right to maternity leave when you have babies to take care of. Five, promoting sustainable development with the environment and the earth and our fellow creatures. And six, waging peace. When I cross Europe, regardless of where I am, rich countries, poor countries, east, west, these are the principles and the vision that they hold. Are Europeans living up to any of this dream? Of course not. No. I could spend hours talking about all the hypocrisy and the shortcomings and the problems that Europeans face individually and collectively that in which they fall way short of experiencing this dream. But that's why it's a dream. Americans have never fully realized our dream. Dreams are what you'd like to be. And the very fact that Europeans have a dream that's so utterly different than ours makes it interesting. And here's my last thought on it. The European dream may be too ambitious. It may not succeed. I don't know. The reason is it's the first time a collective part of the human race, in this case half a billion people, have dared to dream a global dream.
Mr. Rifkin, back in the year 2000, I did a series of interviews with European politicians about their European dream. And these were politicians across the political spectrum, from arch-conservative Otto von Habsburg to Italy's left-wing former EU Commissioner Emma Bonino. And what surprised me is that all of these very European-minded leaders thought that it is crucial for all Europeans to not only have a European dream, but also to be deeply rooted in their specific national visions, whether it is an Italian dream or a French dream. Would you agree with the analysis that in the case of Germany, a positive German dream is the foundation for there also to be a successful European dream?
You know, it's often been said Germany is the economic engine of Europe. From my point of view, Germany's played a much more important role than that. It has been the moral engine of Europe since the end of World War II. I know of no other country in history that willingly shared its economic, political power with its neighbors. You know, 25% of the budget that goes into the European Union is paid by the citizens of Germany. And so I think that Germany being at the center of the European Union, it's also the center of much of the actual developments that have occurred that express a more empathetic approach to the world we live in. I'll give you some examples, all right? Germany has been at the center of championing the Kyoto Treaty on global warming, that we should be sensitive to our environment and the world we live in. But here's what surprised me 2 years ago. I don't know if you remember this, but the German Constitution was amended, and it was amended to include the rights of our fellow sentient creatures by law. This was an incredible turning point in history, because here, for the first time, a government was recognizing and empathizing with our fellow creatures. You know, Abraham Lincoln, one of our greatest president, and Mahatma Gandhi shared a common value. And they said, the mark of a civilization is how it treats those that are the most defenseless and least able to exert themselves. And here is Germany, the third most powerful state in the world, actually taking the time to amend its constitution to say our fellow creatures have rights to be recognized. They're not our rights. We have different rights, but they should be recognized because they have a right to be. And the reason we recognize that is we empathize with all of life, the struggle for life. To me, this is an epiphany for a collective political grouping to do. So I could give many other examples, but what comes to my mind constantly is that Germany's always talked about as a economic engine. I think that's true. But I think more importantly, it's been a moral engine. It's been at the center of this European experiment. And in a sense, the dream, this global dream, comes deep out of the bowels of the German experience after World War II, saying, you know, we're going to turn a new chapter in the way human life is developed on this planet. There is something very deep going on in the German experience. There's a German soul that's emerging, a soulful German that's emerging. Everything in this dream is the opposite of the Nazi experience, of the ideology of the Third Reich.
Of course, societal dreams develop organically and over time and cannot be decided by an expert committee of dream experts. However, let's just play with this. If history would hand you the opportunity to formulate Germany's dream for the future, what would it be? What is your German dream, Mr. Rifkin?
Well, I don't think I need to, because I think the dream is already there. And I think we're seeing the kernel of a dream, much of which emerged in Germany after World War II, and it's now becoming the new standard for the world, just like the American dream was the standard for the world for 150 years. And I believe what's come out of the suffering and the terrible suffering of the German experience is a new dream that I would say is the first effort in history to create global consciousness. And now that German dream has become a European dream, and the European dream is becoming a global dream. And that dream is inclusivity, diversity, sustainable development, good quality of life, balancing work and play, and waging peace. You remember the great German scientist and poet Goethe. He wrote an essay back in 1821. And he was musing that America was fortunate to be a young country unburdened by history of strife and conflict and all the countless misadventures and relentless warfare, you know, that had troubled Europe for so long. And he had a famous quote. He said, America, you're better off. Now we might turn that around and say, in some ways, after World War II, Germany starts again. It has an opportunity for a rebirth. But here's the problem. Many of my German friends tend to be very pessimistic. There is a certain sense of defeat, a sense of pessimism, a sense of cynicism and despair that sets in. Now, especially with the World War II generation, because you can imagine after two world wars and a Holocaust, you'd feel cynical, depressed, and pessimistic as well. But here's my point. There is a deep sense of pessimism that's at the core of the German psyche, which is quite interesting because it's also been a culture that's created so much light in terms of culture for the world. But you can't have a strong dream based on empathy and based on global consciousness if you're a defeatist. Show me a person that is a cynic or a Euroskeptic or a defeatist or a pessimist, and I'll show you someone who can't dream. A dream requires hope and optimism and risk-taking. You can't have a dream if you think someone else is responsible for your life. What the younger generation of Germans has to do is shed that sense of defeatism and cynicism and despair, because you can't have a dream if you're not hopeful. Does that mean that hopefulness should be arrogance? No. To the extent that the younger generation in Germany is tempered in its hopefulness and it's willing to take risk and sacrifice for this kind of dream that's emerging, it will succeed. To the extent that it can't, it will fail. So I'm not sure if the young generation of Germans will be up to this task for what is likely to be the most impressive attempt in history to create a meaningful vision of the future, and one that recognizes that we are in a single planet. I think a lot of people around the world are just beginning to turn their attention to Europe. And when they turn their attention to Europe, you have to turn your attention to Germany, because it's the economic heart of Europe and it's the moral compass. If the young German generation let us down and that dream fails, then what does the world have to look forward to? If we say that global consciousness is going to fail, then we're in trouble, because the world is deeply connected. And without global consciousness, it's going to fragment, and we're going to have a very despairing future if we have a future at all for civilization. So there's a big responsibility on Germany. And what I would say to the young Germans today, don't let us down. Walk the walk. Take heart. You have a dream. Own up to it. Take the responsibility. Be humble to the task and continue on, and don't get cold feet.
New societal dreams seem to emerge either in times of deep crises or in the early stages of new economic booms. The last great boom, global boom, the software PC and internet revolution, fueled the new dreams of, let's say, India, Israel, or Taiwan, but not necessarily a German dream. If we look at another area of your expertise, the energy industry, and especially the hydrogen economy, how could Germany transform its current lead in environmental technologies into something like a new, let's say, environmental German dream?
The great economic changes in history occur when two things happen. First, a basic change in the way people organize the energy of the earth. Secondly, a basic change in the way people communicate with each other to organize the new energy regime. What's going to become clear in the next few years is that this decentralized communication revolution of the 1990s is the new command and control mechanism, the new communication for a whole new energy regime in history, and that is renewable energy and hydrogen economy. We're going to have to take the whole power grid of Germany, the entire power grid of Europe, the entire power grid of the world, which is now centralized, and using the same software, the same hardware, the same architecture that we created in Silicon Valley for the communication revolution, take that exact technology and reconfigure every power grid in Germany and Europe and the world so that the power grid is smart, decentralized, and distributed, so that when I generate power, hydrogen, in my fuel cell, I can take the surplus I don't need and I can send it peer-to-peer back to the grid and share it. The coming together of decentralized communication revolution in the 1990s as the command and control mechanism, the communication, to organize distributive generation of hydrogen energy, power to the people, that's the third industrial revolution. It is a new way to organize the planet. And what's so interesting about it is power to the people. It is basically horizontal power, and it's compatible with the new dream of inclusivity, multicultural diversity, sustainable development, human rights, and peace.
What are the chances of Germany being at the center of this emerging hydrogen economy?
I think that Germany is in the ideal position to lead the third industrial revolution because of the German prowess in chemistry, in engineering, in automotive, and also Germany's leading in renewable energy, which is required for hydrogen power. Germany's leading in wind power. It's making a benchmark and transition to renewable energy. And it already has the technological and scientific and commercial framework in which to actually be the leader of this third industrial revolution. What no country has done yet is create an integrated plan. It's not just about the automobiles or stationary fuel cells or the power grid. It's creating the third industrial revolution. And what Germany could do is bring together a partnership of government, industry, and civil society, three legs of the stool, to actually lay out a long-term strategy to become the first hydrogen-powered economy in Europe and to be able to use all of the resources at its disposal to begin to make this technology available across Europe and then across the world. It would be a great commercial bonus boom for Germany. It would create a tremendous number of jobs in the short run, and it would allow Germany, as the economic and moral engine of Europe, to develop a new energy regime that's sustainable and compatible with the European dream, power to the people.
Mr. Rifkin, thank you so much for dreaming with us.
My pleasure.